Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Is it text number 36? Tamaya manyate loko, hyasangam api samminam, atmao pamyena manujam, vyaprinvanam yato buddha. Tamaya manyate loko, Yasangam api sambina Atmao pamyena manujam Vyaprinvanam yato buddha. Tam unto Lord Krishna, Ayam, all these common men, Manyate, to speculate within the mind. Lokaha, the conditioned souls. He certainly, Asanga, unattached, Api, in spite of, Sambina, affected, Atma, self. Aupam yena, by comparison with the self, Manujab, ordinary man, Vyaprinvanam, being engaged in, Yataha, because, Abudaha, foolish. Because of ignorance. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The common materialistic conditioned souls speculate that the Lord is one of them. Out of their ignorance, they think that the Lord is affected by matter, although it is unattached. Purport. The word Abudaha is significant here. Due to ignorance only, the foolish mundane wranglers misunderstand the Supreme Lord and spread their foolish imagination amongst innocent persons by propaganda. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna is the original primeval personality of Godhead. And when he was personally present before the eyes of everyone, he displayed full-fledged divine potency in every field of activity. As we have already explained in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, he is completely independent to act however he likes. But all his actions are full of bliss, knowledge, and eternity. Only the foolish mundaners misunderstand him. Unaware of his eternal form of knowledge and bliss, which is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads. His different potencies work in a perfect plan of natural sequence, and doing everything by the agency of his different potencies, he remains eternally the supreme independent. When he descends on the material world by his causeless mercy to different living beings, he does so by his own potency. He is not subject to any condition of the material modes of nature. and he descends as he is, originally. The mental speculators misunderstand him as the Supreme Person, and they consider his impersonal features as inexplicable Brahman to be all. Such a conception is also the product of conditioned life. because they cannot go beyond their own personal capacity. Therefore, one who considers the Lord on the level of one's own limited potency is only a common man. Such a man cannot be convinced. Such a man cannot be convinced that the personality of Godhead is always unaffected by the modes of material nature. He cannot understand that the sun is always unaffected by infectious matter. The mental speculators compare everything from the standpoint of experimental knowledge of their own selves. Thus, when the Lord is found to act like an ordinary person in matrimonial bondage, they consider him to be like one of without considering that the Lord can at once marry 16,000 wives or more. Due to a poor fund of knowledge, they accept one side of the picture while disbelieving the other. This means that due to ignorance only, they always think of Lord Krishna as like themselves and make their own conclusions, which are absurd and unauthentic from the version of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a very famous verse of the Bhagavatam. Tamayam manyate loko yasangam api sanginam atma pom yena manujam vyaprinvanam yato buddhaha loke cha vede cha. There's a contrast between loka and veda. Loka is the common populace, ordinary people. What's wrong with being an ordinary person? Isn't that right? Isn't everybody supposed to be an ordinary person? In Russian, the word is normalna. You know, whatever is right is okay, is normalna. It's normal. You're supposed to just be normal, not too much anything on either side. What's wrong with being ordinary? What's wrong with being ordinary in this realm, the material realm, is that you're in ignorance. You're in ignorance of your relationship with Krishna. You're in ignorance of his position. Janma karma cha me divyam. Evam yo veti tatvataha. Someone who knows how I take my birth and how I act in this world, differently than everyone else does, he becomes liberated. He will not take birth again in this world. There's no guarantee that he won't die. In fact, he will die, but it will be his last death. One who understands my birth and activities will not take birth again in this world. He'll come back to me. And we can say, logically, as someone who doesn't know how Krishna's birth and activities are different than ordinary birth and activities, that's an ordinary man trapped in the ordinary cycle of samsara, and he will have to take birth again and again and again. Yamaraj, I don't remember the exact words, tells the young Brahmin Nachiketa in the Katopanishad, Panditam manyamana dandram yamana pariyanti te me mam, something like that. People think that they're very learned. They presume, because they have some university education or some upadhi that they received from studying under some pundit, they think that they're very learned. That suffix, manyamana, it's not a suffix, it's a participle, but the idea of it is that you think you're something when you're not really the something. You're not really, I may be an American, I have an American passport, and I think I'm an American. That's right, I am an American. At least my passport says I'm an American. But if I had an American passport and I thought I was Greek, then I'd be in a little delusion. So the idea of manyamana is not just you think rightly, but you think wrongly, that you're something that you're not. They think that they're pundits. And what happens to them? Yamaraj says, I see them over and over again. They're wandering material existence, and they come by to my court every once in a while, over and over again. These pandita manyamana, people who think themselves learned. Why they're falsely learned is that they don't understand the Supreme Lord and their relationship with Him. And symptom is that these upstanding ordinary citizens think that Krishna, if they know anything about Krishna, if they've heard about Him, they think that He's like them. They think His janma and His karma are ordinary like theirs. They think that Krishna is a henpecked husband, like themselves, and like all the other husbands in the material world, controlled by their wives. But this is the transcendental reality that the Bhagavatam is revealing to us. The last verse described it. Udama bhava pishanamala vobuhasa vridava loka nihato madanopi yasam. Sammuya chapa majahat pramadota masta yasyenviyam vimatitam kuha kaina sheku. Cupid is the bewilderer. He's has the power of bewildering us with sex agitation. This is for the perpetuation of the different species of life. Sexual desire is there. Just like desire, the stomach complains that it's hungry, so that you remember to eat. If you didn't feel hunger, you'd forget to eat if you were too busy with something else. So the hunger feeling is there. The urge to eat is built in genetically. Similarly, the urge to procreate, because the species need to be procreated. Life doesn't continue if there's no sex. Everyone will die, just like there was a religious order in America, somewhat popular and somewhat successful, the Shakers. They were a very popular movement in America in the middle of the 19th century, or 18th and 19th century. Problem is, they practiced such strict celibacy that their members were not allowed to get married and have children. It was against their rules to have children. If you had got married or had children, you were kicked out. So the problem was, the only way they could continue their movement was to get new members, because they weren't procreating their own members. And so eventually the movement died out because of their very strict principles. One lady was the last member, 1905, and she died, and that's the end of the Shakers. No more left. The species don't continue. Life doesn't continue in this world unless there's sexual procreation or asexual procreation. You could split yourself, like an amoeba. You can avoid sex and still procreate yourself. But only some very low forms of plant life can do that, asexual procreation. So Cupid does his job to see that life goes on in this world, to make sure everyone's sufficiently agitated by sex desire. It's just a job. Just like the demigod Varuna controls our stomachs and makes us know that it's time to eat. So animals, they have periods, where they're sexually agitated, once a month, once a year. Human beings are a little different. They're agitated all the time. That's Cupid's work. But he was bewildered by Krishna. Madan Mohan. Cupid, whose job is to bewilder everybody, Krishna bewilders him. And Shukadeva is describing how the queens of Dwarka, they were showing such feminine attractions without that doing anything obscene. They were simply acting very shyly and glancing in certain ways, and Udama Bhava, very grave expressions. Pishuna, Amala, Valgohasa, exciting, spotless, beautiful smiling. So Prabhupada translates it in the word-for-word synonyms. And Vridava, Aloka, shy glancing. Civilized ladies, this is how they are empowered by Cupid, to in a very chaste way, help generate this urge for procreation. But what happens? Krishna, yasendrinam vimatitum kurakaina sheku. These very expert ladies could not agitate Krishna in the least. They couldn't vimatitum, they couldn't shake up his senses with all their tricks. But Cupid was bewildered. He was bewildered to see how they had no effect on Krishna. So, Chapa Majahat, he just, out of frustration and anger, he threw his bow away and just left the scene. But foolish, ordinary people think that Krishna is ordinary like them and has these material urges that conditioned souls have. Because we're not satisfied, even up to the point of death. When we die, we still have unfulfilled desires, and therefore we take birth again, impelled by those things that were impelling us in the previous life. Although in childhood, we don't feel, we're not supposed to feel sex agitation in infancy and childhood. But we feel hunger, plenty of it, screaming for food, screaming for various things. The children are always, babies are crying much of the time, demanding fulfillment of their urges. We come back into this world because our urges have not been fulfilled. But Atma Palmyena, they think Krishna is an ordinary man like them. That is ignorance. No matter how high an education you have, no matter what else you know, and no matter what people think of you, no matter how highly you're estimated by everybody else, you're a fool if you think that Krishna is an ordinary person. If you never heard about Krishna, you're very unfortunate. But if you've heard about him and then think that he's just an ordinary person, some hero, some famous person, some lusty boy who's been elevated to the position of a god by these ignorant Hindus who worship anything, if you think like that, then you're the most unfortunate, you're the most ignorant, no matter what degree of education you have. Yato abudaha. Such people who think like this, these mental speculators, it's not bad enough that they have bad ideas, but they have to position themselves as teachers and propagate their bad ideas among their students. And take have the arrogance to claim to be authorities on life, on the values of life, when they don't understand the first basic principles. Basic principles we have to be clear about. We're all Krishna's servants. That's the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. Krishna is the supreme master, and we are all his servants, his creatures. He created us, and we're there for his pleasure, for his purposes. That's basic understanding. There's more, though, more that needs to be understood to practice proper Krishna consciousness. We have fallen into ignorance. We won't speculate how and when we did, but right now we're in ignorance. That we know. We don't have to speculate about that. That we're now suffering the influence of the material nature. If one claims that he's not under the influence of material nature, then ask, why do you have to go to the toilet so many times a day? Now, is that your lila? No? Are you actually free from the influence of material nature? Nobody is. None of us are. So we have to revive our Krishna consciousness. Something we've lost. I mean, somebody can argue we never had it. Anyway, we don't have it now. And we need to get it. Krishna consciousness. Then the question is how. And here's where many who get as far as the first step of understanding that they're Krishna's servants, they lose their way on the second step. That in order to find out your relationship with Krishna, in order to find out how to reestablish your relationship with Krishna, you have to accept advanced devotees as your spiritual authorities. And you have to take guidance. You cannot discover on your own the path to Krishna. You will blunder. You will make wild, false speculations in violation of all the instructions of Shastra, Guru, and Sadhu, and make up your own crazy idea of what you think Krishna consciousness is. It happens. You can visit Radhakund, and you'll meet, if you just sit in the street for a few, half an hour, you'll meet plenty of people who are on that platform. Who, I don't say everybody in Radhakund, but that's a place where they tend to congregate. These people who think they can find their own way in Krishna consciousness without any accepting any authority. It's just them and Krishna. That's not... Even the Mayavadis don't have that kind of approach. Even the Mayavadis are serious about accepting a guru and taking guidance. So it's basic Krishna consciousness that we have to practice under the guidance of authorized devotees. Then we can become special people. It's not satisfactory to be just ordinary. That's foolishness. We have to become special people. We have to rise above this ignorance of our relationship with Krishna, of the real purpose of our life. Prabhupada is a bit pessimistic here. He says, therefore, one who considers the Lord on the level of one's own limited potency is only a common man. And then he says, such a man cannot be convinced that the personality of Godhead is always unaffected by the modes of material nature. Ordinary men have this strong inertia that they want to remain in ignorance. It's very difficult. There may be some hope, but it's very difficult to pull ordinary men out of this ignorance. Devotees have to exert great effort. If they have any compassion for the suffering, ignorant, conditioned souls, they're going to have to dedicate themselves to a very difficult struggle to try to revive the Krishna consciousness in the hearts of those who don't want it, who want to remain ignorant. Prabhupada was very expert in coming up with ways to make it a little bit easier. We're not approaching people on the street, threatening them with violence. You know, pull out a gun and say, you know, chant Hare Krishna or else. We don't even stand on the corner screaming to everybody, you're all going to hell. That's not our style of preaching. Prabhupada had gentler ways of breaking through the barriers of ignorance. People aren't interested in Srimad Bhagavatam. Loka and Veda. The ignorant people have their opinions. Common people. But those opinions are wrong. The correct understanding of what is true is given in the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam is the distilled essence of the Vedic teaching. Nigama kalpa taro galitam palam, the ripened fruit of the desired tree of the Vedas. So, people have to be enlightened with the Vedic knowledge, especially as provided by Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada devised ways that people who have no interest in the Bhagavatam, in the Gita, that we put it into their hands and we take a little of their money to make sure that they take it seriously and to help publish more of those books. That was his basic strategy, to plant hundreds of millions of such seeds all over the world. And then, not everybody, but those who are the most intelligent and pure-hearted, they'll read those books and be enlightened. We see it happening. So many people have been delivered from that ignorance just by getting and accepting Prabhupada's books. And other means, prasadam, good devotees to associate with and to make friends with and to trust and listen to. These are means of breaking through this stubborn ignorance and making people change their minds about wanting to be Krishna's devotees. Anyway, so this is a very basic understanding. We have to, you know, make sure we should think about this, about what's said in these statements, that the whole world is full of people where, if they know anything about Krishna, they think he's an ordinary person like us. That ignorance has to be corrected. We're Krishna's servants. We have to defend his reputation. Nobody in this world should get away with thinking that Krishna is an ordinary person. It should not be tolerated. It's intolerable. Perpetration of intentional perpetration of misinformation. It's criminal. And unfortunately, the government and the police are not in agreement with us that it's any particular crime to not believe in Krishna, to not accept the Bhagavatam. In a civilized state, it would be. You can practice whatever religion you want, but if you blaspheme the Bhagavatam, then you'll be punished. We don't have the backing of the government. So we have to sort of take the law in our own hands and fight against this ignorance. Legal and moral means. We don't do anything illegal or violent or immoral, but we have to do whatever we can within the limits of morality and legality to make people give up this misunderstanding, this falsity. It's blasphemy, but we can call it legally slander. It's a crime. To slander a person who has a reputation, and you say lies about him to destroy his reputation, it's a crime. You can be sued for it. Libel, slander. So these ordinary people are committing this slander, especially the intellectual leaders, the professors of Indology and others. They're slandering Krishna, and they shouldn't be allowed to get away with that. So, anyway, here we're getting some training that might equip us to do some of that work of fighting against this criminal activity of besmirching Krishna's reputation by declaring that he's an ordinary person. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes.
When you present this worship of Krishna,
Well, there could be two causes for such misconception that Krishna is just another mystic. He's not an ordinary person, but he's an ordinary mystic. Just a Yogeshwara. But he's Yogeshwara Eshwara. We have to convince him of that. Well, it's either because they just don't know better, they've been misinformed, innocently misinformed, or else they're impersonalists. If they are convinced that the absolute truth is ultimately impersonal, they're not going to take the personality of Godhead seriously enough. They'll actually be offensive against him and say he's just a mystic. Yogeshwara, Yatra Yogeshwara, O Krishna. Yes, Krishna's there with Arjuna on his chariot. He's the best of all mystics, but he's just a mystic. That's offense against Krishna. Krishna, did you listen to what Krishna said? You were telling the last verse of the Gita, or did you read the rest of the Gita and what Krishna said about himself? That there's nothing superior to him, that he controls everything originates from him, that he's the foundation of the impersonal Brahman. So, therefore, the root of the problem in many cases may be impersonalism, and then you've got to go to the root of the problem and attack the impersonalism. You have to cure them, and that's not easy. Especially if they have some philosophical understanding of Mayavad philosophy, they may be spoiled. It may be very hard to convince them. If they're not so spoiled and they just, heard some crazy things and they don't really understand them, then you may be able to entice them with prasadam and the association of devotees to get a feeling that it's better to be a devotee than to be a Mayavadi, if they're not hardcore Mayavadis. You just show them that life as a devotee is happier. Have some of this prasadam. It's Krishna prasadam. These are Krishna's devotees. Yeah. But if they're hardcore, it's very difficult. It took Lord Chaitanya to show the Brahman effulgence to convince the Mayavadis in Benares. Most of us can't do that. It depends who they are. Some of them just need to associate with devotees and get prasadam and maybe sit in the class and understand something, get attracted by Krishna consciousness, and it may purify them. Others may be able to understand philosophically, but not everybody. Either people are too simple to understand heavy philosophy, or they're too polluted by Mayavad to be able to accept our version of the philosophy. But if they're not polluted or not too, and they're intelligent enough, they might be able to understand philosophically. And there's so much, just in the Bhagavad Gita, if you get someone to read Bhagavad Gita with Prabhupada's purports, then that can dissolve all this misunderstanding. Just get them to take the Gita, you know, make them promise to read it, tell them that you're available to answer their questions if you have any, and get them to at least read the second chapter of the Gita, at least, with Prabhupada's purports. Then that may be a breakthrough. But not everybody can understand philosophy, and some people are too smart. They can't accept, you know, even when we tell them the truth.
Yes? It seems like the Vaishnava governments in the times gone, they accommodated all kinds of philosophies within the state. There were Mayavadi philosophers and...
Yes.
So what would ISKCON do in such a situation? What is our approach in our life? Would we force the people to accept Vaishnavism?
But we're in a very similar situation. At least in many countries, we're living in secular states where all religions are tolerated. Like Thailand is officially Buddhist, very officially Buddhist. But they tolerate all the other religions. They don't restrict or you know, suppress any religion in Thailand and many countries. You know, they're supposedly liberal countries, free countries. So it's like that even now, that all sorts of religions and impersonalism can be practiced and preached. So we have an open market. We have to compete. Everyone's selling their products. So we have to have a better product and advertise it nicely and get it into people's hands. We have to go out there. You know, it's a competitive commercial world. We have to sell Krishna consciousness. In the form of these books, we have to go out there, put this book into people's hands, and get them to buy it. That's the way everyone's thinking. You know, you buy things with money. That's life. So we have to sell Krishna consciousness, especially since it's an open market and we're competing with every philosophy in the world. Every religion, every philosophy. Christianity has been going for 2,000 years. Big competition. Islam, you know, is strong and not very tolerant of other religions, and we have to compete with them. We have to compete with so many nonsense philosophies. So we have to sell Krishna consciousness. Whether it's in democracy or monarchy or whatever, it's pretty much the same situation. I'm sorry, Madan Mohan Puru had something.
I have a few comments about Vasudeva Prabhu and Maharshi Prabhu asking also a question.
But go ahead. We have 5 minutes, go ahead. But there's also a few other questions.
Question about how to entice people to understand Bhagavad Gita properly. Mr. Prabhupada himself in the foreword included a formula by saying that even if a person is not willing to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God, he should at least theoretically accept it. Just like a hypothesis.
Yes.
Like in mathematics, you accept the hypothesis, the premise. But when you just develop it logically, it makes perfect sense, and there is no need to go any further than that. And that's probably the most plausible conclusion or truth. That's what Prabhupada offered in the foreword.
Yes.
Saying that just like at least accept theoretically Krishna is God and read the Bhagavad Gita in that, under that angle, vision,
yes.
So he was aware very well about how hard it is for people to accept
the Bhagavad Gita. He spoke that on the basis of decades of experience of trying to preach the Bhagavad Gita in modern India. He knew how hard it was to convince people.
I tried it on myself when I read the Bhagavad Gita the first time. I thought it worked. Somehow.
When you read it yourself?
No, I read it myself, but somebody gave it to me. He highlighted the point and brought us forward. They generally skip forward, but he told me this is how you read it, his manual.
Yes.
And it worked. So.
Yes.
And Maharishi Prabhu's situation, I remember listening to Prabhupada's class, and he said that if we become the government, we'll also support secular state, but our approach will be to make sure that people who claim different allegiances or affiliations with allegiances really do what they're supposed to do. If somebody claims to be Brahman, if he's not, and Brahman by quality, he'll be dragged down to some other level of existence.
Okay.
So otherwise, he says, the secular state is fine, as long as the government is watching that every religion does what is there in the books. you know, doing all kinds of nonsense. So
okay.
He supported that. He doesn't have to be necessarily Krishna conscious, I mean, overtly Krishna conscious government. Krishna conscious in the sense of like, religious affiliation. But either.
Hypocrisy can't be tolerated. Hmm? Hypocrisy can't be tolerated.
Yeah. Even if it's honest atheist, I don't know how to do that. Honest atheist.
Oh well, not really, but you know, you tell the atheists, you know, this is a limit. Don't go beyond it.
Yeah. A question I had about, you mentioned in the class that Cupid was agitating the queens in a very chaste way to try to influence Krishna. So it looks like he was working through them. And another statement by Lord Brahma in the 10th chapter, he said that. We demigods, we don't have access to Krishna's pastimes, but we work through the senses of Vrijabhasis and use their senses as vessels to drink in the nectar of the lila. So my question is, do we accept that even eternal associates of the Lord, when they come here, accept material bodies, their senses and bodies are still run by the demigods?
No, the bodies are, but they're just vehicles. The consciousness of pure devotees is not dragged down by the apparatus of the body. It remains perfect. That's to be a pure devotee. You can reside in a material body without becoming materially conditioned yourself. This consciousness doesn't degrade. So I wouldn't agree that the queens of Dwarka were affected by Cupid, that they were lusty. They're not. They're pure. They're among the greatest pure devotees.
Yes, I heard
it, sir. Maybe I misheard it. Oh, you mean I said it?
Well,
maybe we're saying that poetically. Maybe Prabhupada said something like that in the purport. But factually, they're not affected by Cupid. I thought we were talking about that Cupid was hoping that they would help him affect Krishna, that he was trying to use them to agitate Krishna. He's thinking he's using them, but actually they're not instruments in his hands. Pure devotees are not controlled by the demigods in that way. At least demigods can control your body, but they can't control your consciousness if you're a pure devotee.
Okay, the bodies make senses, and senses have their initial tendencies, like eyes and ears and nose, things like that, the tongue.
Yeah, you may say something.
It's interesting that the collision between the demigod's influence on the bodies of pure devotees is kind of.
I mean, like the demigod could make you say something that you didn't mean to say, it could come out of your mouth. You know, you can. So a pure devotee can say something that's not true. Mistake, make a mistake externally because demigods are controlling his body and his material mind. But the consciousness is still unaffected.
The 11th chapter of Bhagavatam is a statement by, I guess, Vishnu Chakravarti or Jiva Goswami in the commentary that there are different causes of the fall down to devotees, and one of such causes might be the influence of demigods who become very envious of the world's spiritual progress. But then Cupid himself in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam admits that we demigods are trying to influence, drag down some.
But I think
what's
said is that demigods and other forces can drag down neophyte devotees who have weak faith. Well, someone who has nishtha shouldn't be shouldn't be degradable by demigods. Even nishtha, what to speak of prema, should be enough to protect you from the influence of demigods. As far as they're trying to drag your consciousness down.
So these are
if they can drag your consciousness down, that means that you don't have nishtha, you have weak faith.
So it appears that there is some instances of such a collision between demigods and devotees' real desire to progress spiritually.
Yeah, because the demigods can have influence on your body and even your external mind. But you manage to control your mind. Not like a two out of hand, because the consciousness is doing the best it can to be in control. But the demigods have their sphere of influence also, your body and your mind. So there may be a conflict of interest there. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. Did or did not?
Did bother about it.
Yeah.
So like, how much do we care about the public opinion?
Oh.
What people think about us?
We want to change Loka opinion into Veda opinion. We want to transform the opinion of all these ordinary people. We don't want to let them stay ordinary people. We want to transform their consciousness. But in order to be able to do that, you have to win someone's trust. They have to be convinced that they can trust you. So if you just tell them all nonsense and beat them on the head with the truth, then that doesn't earn their trust usually. Some people might submit to that, but most people won't, being beaten on the head with the truth. So you do have to approach the popular opinion. You have to be considerate of the popular opinion for the purpose of getting your hands on it and transforming it. BTG? Well, some may not agree with that. But anyway, which people? I think they specify that. They're trying to appeal to certain people, not all the people in the world. They want to find people who are beginning to become interested in Krishna consciousness, not just materialists. They're not publishing a popular material magazine to appeal to what people want. No, but people who are beginning to become Krishna conscious, they're concerned about attracting them and thinking about what their opinions are. That's what they mean. It's not unrestrictedly we want to satisfy the popular opinion. Then, who knows what they would publish there. Yes?
Some people go to Radha, they really will that they want to
they have a right to such an opinion. You can think that your guru is the best. And you may have the idea that ISKCON's not so great. That's okay, but it's not good to convince someone else's disciple that his guru is not good. That's spiritual violence. Jai Shini Mani Tai. We shouldn't do it to them. Go tell them that your Babaji guru is a nonsense. They have faith in him, but why should they be telling our devotees not to trust their gurus? It's not proper spiritual etiquette to decry someone else's sincere endeavor to become Krishna's devotee. Especially if they're trying to be devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So why should they condemn us, and why should we condemn them, or why should they condemn us? We'd be wrong if we did it, and if they just take every opportunity they can to badmouth ISKCON. What for? What's accomplished by that?
They just want to attract people to Radha to make money.
Yeah, but they can do that without committing blasphemy against tens of thousands of devotees. You speak bad about ISKCON, you're speaking bad about a lack of devotees or more. One sentence you can commit a huge amount of aparad, blaspheme 100,000 devotees in one sentence. I don't think that's good. Yeah, well, if you're unfortunate to meet someone like that, you should stay out of their way. They're in trouble. They're in spiritual trouble. They're committing such blessings.
Should we protect this one?
Yeah, like here, we ask everyone who's participant, who's a student here, don't go listen to such people. In fact, we make a rule: don't go here. Hear serious spiritual instructions from anyone outside of ISKCON. That's our rule in the school. It's hard to draw the line, but better make it strict. You can go listen to Radhanath Maharaj and all the ISKCON devotees, but don't go outside of ISKCON to hear your Bhagavatam. Because it's a lot of nonsense out there.
Shouldn't we present some philosophical arguments that our rules are not kanishtas for money?
You mean to them?
Yes.
I don't know if we should step down to their level to argue with them. They have such foolish opinions. I mean, they're just sour about ISKCON. How are you going to change their mind? Especially if they may have been in ISKCON and they decided to leave it. You know, what are you going to tell them? They may have some reasons why they got, you know, weren't satisfied or weren't treated the way they wanted to be treated. If someone who trusts you, someone who's your friend, was your friend before and still trusts you, then you can talk. If there's some trust there, then you can try to talk to somebody. But if someone doesn't trust you, then they're not going to accept this from you. They're convinced that, you know, that ISKCON's bad, and unless they have some trust in you, they're not going to hear anything otherwise from you. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.